You are listening to a Barry Long podcast. For information about Barry Long, to download more podcasts, or to purchase any of his wide range of books, video or audio publications, visit barrylong.org. That's barrylong.org.
Today, I'm going to introduce you in your own experience to something that is infinite. There's a lot of talk about infinity, but there's no infinity, real infinity, in your experience. But I'm going to demonstrate it to you. And that is very rare, of course, because this is a finite existence. And we are, as it were, finite, in finite bodies, and every thought is finite. Everything is finite, so where are we going to find this infinity? Well, we'll do that. Of course, we would normally look for science to demonstrate infinity to us, but their idea of infinity is to go into space, which is a sensory space made by the brain, and that's not infinity at all. That's just a sensory infinity, and I'm not talking about a sensory infinity such as the universe, the so-called universe out there, which is supposed to be real. Now, the universe that you see around you and the stars at night are not real. They are relatively real. That means that they are produced by our brain. Our brain's projection of a sensory universe, of a sensory body, of sensory trees, of sensory stars, of sensory heavens, sensory motor cars. Everything is of our senses, produced by our senses. Nothing is real. Everything in sense passes away or dies or disappears. And science is still burrowing away into this material sensory universe, and never realizing that it cannot and is not the truth, because what is the truth does not pass away, disappear, as they and their predecessors all did. Now, to make it clear what is the universe, certainly is true. It certainly is real. And if this is a sensory projection, it is a sensory projection of what is real. And the real universe is inside of us, deep down in that cone that we are endeavoring to enter and have intimations of, and to actually realize the extraordinary depths of it. In there, the universe, or the cosmos as it's best to call it, the cosmos is energetically present in every one of us in its reality as an energy. That energy is behind the brain, and that then, the brain, its proximity to the brain, makes the brain project a sensory, formal, universal cosmos. Because the brain produces all forms and divides everything. The brain is a divider. So it divides what is energetically, absolutely one, which is the universe, you know, universe, one verse. It divides the universe up into stars and people and this and that, and the brain is a divider, a sensory divider. In your own experience, you can see that. And it is important in the spiritual life For you're not just to wander around looking for God or whatever it is. It is certainly important to increase your intelligence by giving up your negativity. It is certainly important to increase your intelligence by being able to look into your body and see what is real in there. For intelligence, if it can only see what is real in the situation, becomes more intelligent, more swift. And to perceive or grasp the idea of what I'm going to demonstrate to you later requires a swiftness of intelligence that was very rare on this earth. Very rare. But I'm going to show it to you so that you can see from now on in your life how often you can perceive and be this infinity. So I was saying that the spiritual life is to not just go into what is immediately inside your body, but is to look around and hear from the Master the realities of living and life, realities beyond your own brain. To listen to the Master, because he's supposed to have realized things that are beyond the normal perception. And his job, and the reason he's allowed to realize those by the will, is that he has given the will and the ability to convey it to the people so that they themselves may grasp and practice and then do the same as he has done, realize all these truths, such as the one about the universe or cosmos being absolutely energetically inside you now. All one energy. All one beautiful, fantastic energy now, which the brain divides up into sensory projections and forms, such as you and I and all the rest of it and the stars and the whole magnificent sensory projection. So it's a sensory projection, and you should be able to hear that and demonstrate that in your own experience, because it stops you from becoming too identified with this sensory projection. Because when you're too identified with the sensory projection, as most people are, there is a fear of death. Because you do not have the knowledge of death, therefore what you don't have the knowledge of, you fear. And the idea of the spiritual life is to reach a place, as I mentioned yesterday, a place of realization of immortality, so that you know without any question, so that if anyone questioned you about it, anyone, any scientist, anyone at all, you can go on for a day or 2 days or 3 days demonstrating it or talking about it and describing what it is. Because it is you. Once you're immortal, you are immortal. Means you cannot die, because you know that everybody dies. But I cannot die. And that is my intelligence, which cannot die. And my intelligence eventually, once it is swift enough, when intelligence is swift enough, what does it become? It becomes consciousness, which knows everything without having to know anything. A magnificent place of peace. No more questions. No more discontent. What a wonderful place it is, and it's all due to the speed of the intelligence becoming equal to consciousness. And that's what you're here for. And that's what everybody's here for. But oh, what a trudging existence it is for all the people trying to work out what it's all about. It's just about becoming more intelligent. And that is not the ability to work out the Sydney Morning Herald crossword puzzle. Or to understand Einstein's theory. Which is all related to relativity of sensory perception and sensory existence. No truth in it whatever, except for the relativity of sensory existence and the movement of matter. That's the only truth of it. Because it's all projection. And you'll notice that most of these scientists have a dreadful love life, a dreadful history of their love lives. Couldn't love woman. Couldn't love them. Didn't know how to love them. But they knew how to write theories. Now what's life about? If it's not about love and peace, real peace, and the tremendous knowledge that you hear me speaking from my consciousness, what's life about? Writing books, quoting other scientists, what they have said, and feeding more onto that. Well, how about being original? How about talking about love, which is what we all need, and truth? My God, how wonderful truth is, to be able to be honest, to be able to be simple. What a wonderful thing it is to be simple. How many people in your life out there do you know who are simple? The children are about the closest you can get to it, but they're soon becoming unsimple, complicated, fearful, believing scientific theories, and not relating at all to the inner life, which is death. That death of this body and these senses and this brain. Now, in most of the stories and self-knowledge that has been expressed in human experience, it sounds as though light is consciousness. Light is an expression of consciousness in this sensory existence. So let's have a look at it. This is not what I'm going to reveal to you. I'm just talking the whole thing. I want you to look at it. The light at the end of the tunnel is a word that we use, is an expression we use to describe something that is beyond our reasoning and everything, and we see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's something beautiful. And how many people who have had near-death experiences are in a tunnel, which is very common, near-death experience, who are in a tunnel and they see a light at the end of the tunnel, a beautiful light. In that sense, they are talking about consciousness, something that is magnificent, and yet it is described as light. There's the hymn writer who wrote, "Lead kindly light beneath the encircling gloom. Lead thou me on. The night is dark," meaning their self is dark, "and I am far from home," meaning I'm far from being what I am. "Lead thou me on." So in that sort of inspirational poetry, there is this acknowledgement of light being something very important to us, which I say is consciousness demonstrated or projected in the world. Then there is the light of the day, how we love the light. We go to sleep in the dark. Our system starts to go quiet until the light rises from the sun. And up we get, and we're filled with new energy, and we're all alive, rejuvenated by going into the dark of sleep. And then the light comes, the consciousness comes, doesn't it? We regain consciousness, it is said, after anesthetic or after sleep. I'm conscious again. I'm in the light. I'm sure you can say other examples of how light is synonymous in this existence with consciousness and how we love it, the light. Now, if we go back to science, we see that science also is busily engaged in analyzing, dissecting, and doing everything with light. And specifically, according to science, the speed of light is an absolute. There is nothing, according to science, that can exceed the speed of light. So that does make light pretty important, doesn't it, even scientifically? An absolute. And yet, this absolute is demonstrably not absolute. Demonstrably finite and material, this light from the sun. Because the light that the scientists can measure, the light that's around us according to scientific theory, takes 8 minutes to travel from the sun to the earth. Well, that's not much of an absolute to me. What do I do in those 8 minutes? You know, I can hop in the car and I can drive up to Kingscliff in those 8 minutes, and it's still trundling along. And so they call that an absolute because of their lack of self-knowledge. And they worship that speed of light. And because it can't go beyond the speed of light, they develop a theory of relativity. And as you can't be in all positions at once, you have to imagine a place where you are in all positions at once, and you develop a theory of relativity. Absolute rubbish. Except in this external projection, material projection, and the theories developed by science, which is a world of its own. Now, at this stage, I'm going to interrupt, and I would like us to go into the body, because what I'm going to talk about, what I'm going to reveal to you, requires a good deal of intelligence to receive. Intelligence that science does not have. So, let us go in and clear our bodies of the tensions that we have there by our intelligent focus on the body, until we can get the focus of the whole body without any body. If that's possible, you don't have to try to do it. It just happens once you are able to disidentify with your mind and emotions, which always, from looking in the mirror, keep creating our bodies. So close the eyes. And now we are using the one thing that we have, the one of the two things that we have that are real in our existence. Our intelligence, our intelligent focus, that means without any interpretation, without any definitions, without any voices coming from the mind or emotions. We don't want any monitor, thank you. We just want the pure intelligence, my pure intelligence, And to focus on the pure sensation that is everywhere in my body. But just for practice, let us start with the head. Now, the skull is not that easy to get the sensation in, although it's there, of course, because there's not much flesh around the skull. But when you come to the soft side of the face, there you can get the sensation very easily. In the ears, the nose, the eyes, cheeks, everything is sensating beautifully, perfectly. And because I am intelligent, I am not creating any emotion, I am displacing emotion that might be there as tension by just simply seeing, registering the pure sensation in my face and head. And then I can come down to the throat. And there is likely to be a little more tension than other places. Likely to be. But if I can only get to the sensation there, which of course is there. There it is. then that tends to release any tension that's in my throat. Because nothing can stand the focus of pure intelligence. Nothing can stand against it in time. So now I have my whole face and my throat. I've got the whole lot of that sensating beautifully. I can always depend on my sensation being there, my pure sensation. It's a wonderful thing. Never fails me. Always there. Always an anchor for me to put my intelligence on and get rid of my confusion of what I'm doing. Then I can come down to my chest or my shoulders. Shoulders, of course, have an accumulation of tension in them that allow us to swing the hammer, swing the axe, put our arms around somebody and squeeze. That's all stored, that energy is stored in the muscles of the shoulders. And that's okay. As I say, that's the good part. That's the value of the self that does tend to accumulate in the shoulders to give us the strength of wielding things, using the iron, picking up heavy saucepans, all those things. And that's where it should be. And it shouldn't be an overdose of it either, because the self is always endeavouring to overdose itself into every part of our body. And the shoulders is one place where it tends to accumulate more than is necessary. And so therefore many people need massages in the shoulders, particularly, to get rid of an excess of tension, the energy to use the arms and do the ironing. So an excess of any of this energy is what we're endeavouring not to get. We endeavour to get balanced. Not too much. Not too little. We don't have to worry much about too little. It's too much. Because often when we have too much tension, which is the self that's risen up from the stomach into the shoulders, when we get too much tension in the shoulders, it soon goes up to the head. And we get a headache, or we get an eye ache, or we can't stop thinking. So best to endeavour to intelligently see the tension in the shoulders and to just see it. You don't have to do anything about it, although it will seem to drop down towards the stomach back home, leaving the residue that is necessary for the strength of movement. Just the mere fact of putting your intelligence on the pure sensation of these places reduces the tension in those places, although you may not register that relief immediately. But done regularly, by being intelligent regularly, you will make your body supple, easy, soft, lovable, loving and yet firm. And then we come to the chest. Now the chest is a wide area and there's distinct sensation there. Again, we don't want too much sensation in the chest. So to intelligently focus on the sensation in the chest is to reduce the unnecessary tension that gathers there and can cause pain, a band of pain or tightness. And Now you'll notice that no thought has been necessary, no interpretation has been necessary. All we are doing is seeing what is. Pure sensation. Then down to the solar plexus. Sensation is not so easy to register there, because it is a very, very fine, sensitive part of the body, is the solar plexus. But it's there. And you can go through the solar plexus to the spine, and there you can get some good sensating in the back. Good sensation there, good, easy, because that's where we protect our whole fine and soft part of the frontal part of the body by exposing our back, and so our back has to have